Okay, Dom, we definitely need to begin today's podcast with a disclaimer. Exciting, right?
Continue.
So we are back today to talk about something that, first of all, I am frankly extremely reluctant to talk about for several different reasons, but it has become at least a semi-mainstream talking point, although I'm guessing there are going to be plenty of people out there who have absolutely no idea what we are even hinting at when they see like the episode title for today. But it is something that I have been personally very deep in the weeds on here for the last couple of months at this point, so did want to definitely flag up at the beginning of this podcast. If you are a reality TV person, this podcast may very easily just not be for you. I promise we'll be back next week with something that will hopefully be of more aligned, I guess, with your interests in general. And then the other thing that I definitely want to make clear before we even hit the theme song today is nothing that I am saying over the course of this podcast, or that Dom is saying, but particularly me, is anything close to financial advice. The NFT world is, for sure, one way or the other, either in the extremely early days, or we are in a bubble and it's already the extremely late days. It is, as far as I'm concerned, still kind of up in the air as to which way that is going to go. But I must be adamant before we dive into anything: nothing you are going to hear today constitutes anything close to financial advice. I want to be really clear about that. This is, for my money, for my literal money, I guess, still pure gambling here in March 2021 at the time of this recording. And that is the other thing that I wanted to flag up ahead of time, which is, generally speaking, when it comes to like new technology, it is exceedingly rare that discussions from the early days ever age well. So use the classic like John Oliver example, your boy Dom. Everybody remembers or has seen the clips, not remembers from real time, but has seen on YouTube the news broadcasts talking about in like 1995, oh, what is this newfangled thing everyone seems to be into called the internet? And is this going to be a lasting thing? And similarly, everyone has seen the clips of whatever it was, Google Glass in like 2008, that was supposed to be the next big life-altering thing. And now no one even remembers that it ended up existing. And I want to be very clear, I see pretty much no way that whatever conversation we're about to have doesn't end up aging hilariously weirdly, or potentially depressingly weirdly, very hard in one direction or the other. And I hope that anyone listening to this in the future understands that we are here just to do the best that we can do in late March 2021 and contextualize that whenever you are listening to this down the line. Okay, let's go.
Well, speak for yourself. I'm going to crush it. That's all the song.
Just kidding. Disclaimer number two here. Perhaps more accurately, like disclaimer number five. But speaking of things we did not know at the time of this recording, we sat down to do this on the evening of March 29th, 2021, and on the morning of March 30th, 2021, some pretty major news broke that we were obviously not aware of as we were talking through everything here. You were going to hear about a company called Dapper Labs, which runs a product called NBA Top Shot, and a major investment was just announced to the tune of $305 million by a group that includes Will Smith, Kevin Durant, who is not in the news for any other reasons today, so don't bother Googling that, and probably most notably, Michael Jordan. So bear in mind, please, that we did not know that at the time that we were recording this. And for real now, play the damn theme song. Here we go now with the post-disclaimer, post-theme song portion of the podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you here with us. As mentioned already, this is going to be slightly different than our normal fare here. I don't know how much reality TV is going to be coming up along the way. What we are here to talk about today are NFTs. Dom, let me begin by actually asking you, what have you heard about NFTs to this point, not from me?
So I've heard a lot of the buzz around it and have at least tried to inform myself with the intention of helping to inform the audience, I guess. And this is a weird perspective to be giving this kind of explainer from, where usually you're talking about a topic that you yourself feel comfortable talking about. You have a lot of domain-specific knowledge. In this case, I don't feel that confidence, and I'm not sure if that's because there is a gigantic gap in my own understanding, or if there really isn't that much to understand, and there was just this kind of a shell game at work that once you lift up the shell and you see what's underneath, you kind of have seen all there is to see. So I guess hoping that this discussion will clarify my own position on all of that. But this feels like a very recent craze, to put it that way, where I know you said you've been in the early stages of this stuff, and that was over the past few months. It feels like for me, all of this hype over NFTs was really this month, this March. It's only in the past few weeks that I've seen all of this take off. And from what I understand, it's not like it's the product of some recent technological advance where, this wasn't possible in 2018, but it's possible here in 2021. It feels like this concept was at least on the table for a long time, and this is only now that it's really hitting the mainstream.
Well, let me preface all of this by saying, and should have probably flagged this up in the disclaimer, I am not by any stretch like an NFT expert at all. I'm sure there are going to be it is at least possible that there are going to be places along the way here where I am not getting into the full extent or details that a true NFT expert could explain to you. But based on what I think I know about just kind of the history, this is something that has been a concept being acted upon like in practice for at least a couple of years, and it didn't really blow up until very recently, but there are like OG NFT people who have been in the mix here for at least 2 or 3 years, I believe. Like to immediately name drop one of like the NFT whales, this guy Pranksy. I think I've seen him talking about like this is something he's been into since 2018-ish. But yeah, it definitely does seem like something that could even predate that, and it just didn't pick up any kind of mainstream popularity until very recently. But I do think it would be pertinent to flag up just what NFTs are as a concept at the beginning of the podcast for anyone unclear, which I, again, am guessing is a pretty reasonable percentage of the people hearing us. So NFTs, an NFT, it stands for a non-fungible token. So it is very similar to like Bitcoin, essentially. It's almost like a ton of different cryptocurrencies, sort of, where NFTs are totally authenticated by blockchain. They're all blockchain based, which means they're never at the risk of having any kind of like diminishing conditions, like physically. There are no concerns on those fronts. It is impossible to forge, and there is complete transparency on every single purchase and sale on whatever you are interested in buying. But what makes it non-fungible, these tokens, which is unlike Bitcoin, where any one Bitcoin is equal to any other Bitcoin, it doesn't matter when they were mined or anything along those lines. Non-fungible means none of these are dead equal to each other. There are plenty that are very similar, but there are all the each of them has some sort of distinguishing characteristic to make them literally unique DAO. Many are very similar, but none are exactly identical. So that is what the non-fungible element means. They all have some kind of distinction that makes them discernible from any other. And there are already a ton of different types of NFTs. I'm sure we're going to talk about plenty of them along the way here. The main one that I'm guessing you may have been hearing about semi-recently is the art world has been really, I don't know if revitalized is the right word, but they have been eager to adopt the NFT platform. It has done a lot to give very little known, lesser known artists the opportunity to get a global kind of reach towards prospective buyers or just people who want to see what they have. Music has been going down this path more recently. And if I can, again, begin with a question for you, was it the Beeple sale that you heard about? Do you know what I mean when I ask about Beeple?
I do, but that only came up in the course of my research for this podcast. I think my main introduction to the topic was hearing whispers from you talking about it. Not at the early stages, by the way. I did not get in on the ground floor with all of this, so thanks for the hook up there. But your involvement with this, and part of it was so often we would schedule a podcast, and then events related to this would kind of end up needing your attention for some part of the day, and we'd have to reschedule at short notice, which is not a shot at you, but it's a reflection on how quickly these things were moving at the time and how kind of on the ball you had to be to stay up to date with everything. And then, you know, following, as I do, a lot of people who are, you know, former or current professional poker players, people who, and there's a lot of overlap between that world and people who were crypto enthusiasts or, you know, tech enthusiasts, people always on the lookout for the next big thing that they can be one of the early innovators in, so to speak. You know, I heard this constant drip feed about this mysterious NFT concept, which eventually was coming so thick and fast that you couldn't ignore it anymore.
Right, and that is essentially how my friends and I got into it as well. And this is a very common origin story, but some of the biggest names in the daily fantasy sports community, which is also very closely, there's a lot of crossover between those guys and the high level poker guys, who were very on the ball in the early days as far as all of the crypto world was concerned. One guy in particular, this guy Bales, who is well known in daily fantasy, wrote a blog post in like mid-January about he was part of a team that just spent $35,000 on this Ja Morant rookie card on this basketball NFT site, and his mom thought he was crazy and everyone in his real life thought he was crazy, and he wrote a blog post explaining why. And that was, I think, a lot of the people who got in around the same time as I did. I think for a lot of us, kind of our introduction to this, and it has completely exploded from there. But I definitely want to flag up, I by no means am any sort of like overall NFT expert. It is really just one particular NFT platform that I have been heavily involved in, and it is that basketball platform called NBA Top Shot. And it has consumed a lot of my time lately, and I'm sure we'll get more into that. But so to kind of use an illustration from there about what I mean by everything being like at least discernibly different, and no two NFTs are absolutely alike in this basketball platform. The easiest way to think about it is essentially like digital basketball cards, although they are more accurately what are called moments, like digital basketball moments, where you get the highlight of one particularly awesome play, and that gets minted with however many copies. So the ones that don't have very many copies are much more scarce, and that makes them more valuable. And the ones that are of LeBron James are from a guy that everyone has heard of, and that makes them more valuable. So, for instance, the now kind of iconic LeBron James no-look three-pointer, that is one of the plays that people who are in on this can go and buy, or they could have gotten them from PAX or whatever. And there are 15,000 copies of that play, and every one of them has a serial number between 1 and 15,000. So they are all looking at the same play, but each copy has some varying degree of value depending on like how good the serial number is. And that is something that's entirely up to the users. But generally speaking, like the closer to one your serial number is, the better it is. And like if you get the person's like jersey number, that's also extremely valuable. But that is what makes them at least technically a bit different. And the first question that I would like to address that you haven't even asked yet, but is probably the most frequently asked question, is why on earth would you pay money for that when you can just go on YouTube and watch this clip for free? And I think this is kind of the fundamental appeal of NFTs in general, which is, yeah, you absolutely can go on YouTube and watch that clip for free. Go nuts. That doesn't affect the value of the NFTs themselves. If anything, I would say the more you watch that LeBron James no-look three-pointer on YouTube, the better it is for like the legacy of that play. And it is the combined elements of both authenticity and ownership. So in the case of NBA Top Shot, all of this is officially licensed by the NBA. And I'm already nervous. This is sounding like a sales pitch. Again, this is not at all financial advice, but the authenticity, this is all the NBA officially signing this. And no, you don't get like licensing fees anytime ESPN wants to use that play, but the NBA has essentially approved, like, we are involved in this. This is something we endorse, and will continue wanting to promote because they get a cut of every sale and they have a ton of incentive to continue growing this particular brand. And then the ownership the blockchain also goes a long way in both of these departments as far as authenticating. And then the technical ownership, like, you get the moment like in your account and you can watch it anywhere you want on it, and obviously you can watch it on YouTube anywhere you want to. Please do, by all means, go on YouTube, enjoy. But you can't resell the YouTube clip, whereas people who have the LeBron James no look three-pointer, as long as NFTs are considered a popular thing that people are interested in, they do have the ownership rights and they can list it for whatever price they want, and when someone wants to buy it at that price, they get that money. So that is, I think, the vital element as far as, at least in the short term, why these have become popular. And I believe in both of those things personally. Again, not advice for you, the listener, but I think those are just fundamentally very sound concepts that have been extraordinarily valuable throughout like the entire history of mankind. And to kind of illustrate that, I saw a photo on Twitter that I thought did a good job of this like a day or two ago at this point, where, Dom, I'm guessing you've been to the Louvre, right?
I have not actually, but go on.
So I'm guessing you've heard of the Mona Lisa, right?
Yes, I have.
When you go to the Louvre and go look at the Mona Lisa, what you will see is not only the Mona Lisa, you will see dozens of people around the Mona Lisa taking pictures of it with their phones, and that does not diminish the value of the Mona Lisa. Again, I would argue that drives up the value of the Mona Lisa, is it being this popular thing, but there's only one authentic copy of that, and that, I think, is kind of the... I can just watch it on YouTube. Yeah, I can just look up a picture of the Mona Lisa and get roughly the same experience, but I know it's not the actual Mona Lisa that I'm looking at. And actually, let me ask you something that I heard come up on a different podcast about this, and credit to another one of the OGs here, MBL, who has been making the rounds in like the New York Times and Wall Street Journal, giving a bunch of interviews about this as one of the super early adopters. He flagged up the hypothetical that I'd be curious to hear your answer on. Dom, say the Louvre has, of course, the original Mona Lisa, but also somehow, imagine that this were possible, had a perfect facsimile of the Mona Lisa. It just didn't have the backstory, but it was absolutely identical. No amount of carbon dating or chemical testing or anything could allow anyone in the world to discern that from the actual Mona Lisa, and the Louvre had both copies of these, and for some unknown reason, they decided to burn the actual Mona Lisa. Would you rather go see the perfect facsimile, or would you rather go see the ashes of the actual Mona Lisa?
Well, now we're getting to some real Ship of Theseus style shit.
Don't know why I thought you would ever give a real... The listeners at home, ask yourself this question, but Dom, which would you rather see, the perfect facsimile, or would you rather see the ashes?
I guess I would rather see the perfect facsimile, but I think, as someone who has no real interest in fine art myself and is, you know, fully aware of how big of a scam the organized art dealing world is, and that's explicitly the point of it in many cases, I'm not going to draw a distinction by saying that the art world is in some way more ethically pure or anything, but I think most people would point to the crux of that issue being all of those people who maybe have traveled from far-flung corners of the world to go to Paris, to go to the Louvre, who are really excited to see the Mona Lisa. It's because that is the Mona Lisa. Like, that is the canvas on which, you know, the original paints were used to craft the original, authentic, one and only Mona Lisa. And even though I can go on Google Images as we're talking right now and take a look at the image of the Mona Lisa for myself, for many people, that experience is qualitatively different enough to be worth the effort and to have that sentimental attachment to it. By contrast, if you know, if you have this this NFT that's linked to this amazing basketball moment, the NFT exists as its own like abstract concept. It is in no way an actual replication of that moment, right? There's nothing about it which is in any way more authentic or unique than you just, again, going on YouTube and watching that moment for yourself.
80% of people say they would rather see the ashes. I would rather see the ashes, and there, in my mind, is. This is, again, officially licensed by the NBA. There are...
But what does that mean, that it's officially licensed by the NBA? Well, as a sports fan who apparently has a lot of money to burn and is considering investing in some NFTs, why is that the thing that should move the needle for me one way or the other?
Because this will continue to be propped up by a massively globally recognized organization, whereas if someone on YouTube were to say, okay, I'm making my own NFTs of this LeBron James no-look three-pointer, there's no real faith in that. And it is vital.
But that explanation is solely in terms of how reliable that corporate endorsement is for this NFT as a financial vehicle, rather than any actual connection to the sporting moment that it represents, right? Whereas, again, if I want to go and see the ashes of the Mona Lisa, well, that's significant to me because, holy shit, some lunatic just set fire to the Mona Lisa, right? Like, that in itself has some cultural significance, whereas this kind of Hall of Mirrors version of this epic LeBron James moment, like, what that's all that is a way for a very, very large corporation to milk that for every kind of a drop of money it can get.
So to use like physical sports cards as an example, do you, and not even necessarily sports cards, but I assume like for you, Magic the Gathering cards may be a better illustration of this. There are clearly authentic and inauthentic versions of things. If you print out on your computer,
right,
a replica of the best Magic cards, that's not going to get you very... No one's going to buy those from you.
Yeah, and as someone who works in that, you know, physical collectible space, it's like, I am no stranger to the argument that there are many commodities that are valuable because of their scarcity, and that scarcity is artificial. It's by design. And the actual value of the thing is the paper that it's printed on. And if you wanted to print those yourself with the right equipment, you could go ahead and do it.
But you can't, again, this is why the blockchain is so vital. They cannot be forged.
But the thing itself does not have a value outside of the... And, okay, with the caveat that this is true of basically everything, if you get reductive enough about it, this moment has no value outside of our agreement that we have slapped this NFT on it, and therefore it is worth a lot of money, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and you agree, yes. It's not, like, so this has the NBA Topshop branding on it, but nothing about this is about the LeBron James moment, right? Like, it's wrapped up in the legacy of that, and it's certainly using it to drive up the sticker price of these things, but nothing about this is inherently related to basketball or to any of the players or the moments in any way. It's just, you know, if the National Hockey League wants to, and I'm sure they have already, launch their own brand of NFTs, they could do that. And it's effectively exactly the same concept throughout.
Right. But the, like, to use the most extreme example, the Honus Wagner original cards that now sell for like $5.5 million or whatever, people are not investing in the cardboard there. They're investing in the scarcity, right, and legacy. And that is what the NFT world is not promising, but certainly banking on, is people continuing to find this sort of thing valuable, which I think if you look through over, as you kind of alluded to, throughout the entire course of human history, pretty much that is a reliable thing that people find valuable.
Certainly. And when that batch of baseball cards that contained the original Honus Wagner card was created. I'm sure the hope in someone's mind was, I really hope that one day these are valuable commodities and that, you know, people wish they had got in on the ground floor. But I think for most people, what separates these two cases is, in that case, you know, back however long ago it was, people bought the cards and they did thought, okay, maybe these will be collectibles. But for some people, they were just excited to open up their pack of cards and see who they got. It, you know, it triggered that easy dopamine rush for them. Whereas this, I feel like the NFT process strips away a lot of the edifice and the emotion behind it, and it is just raw financial speculation. And you know, you have like I joined the pack drop at 2 p.m. Eastern today, and I'm number 200,000 and something in the queue or whatever. And that's not because I know the first thing about the NBA or have any sentimental attachment to this. It's that I have been reliably advised, although strictly in a non-legal, non-formal capacity, I hasten to add, that this would be a good moneymaker were I to get my hands on one of these packs. So I think that, you know, you have the people who, you know, to use the trading card example, they were really into baseball when they were kids. They bought a bunch of baseball cards, and then they got stashed in their parents' attic, and then they heard later on that actually one of these is worth a fortune now, and so they excitedly went and uncovered those cards and dusted off the packaging and tried to you know, verify that or whatever. And that, I think, for most people feels more genuine than this, which is basically just a reskinned lotto ticket.
So I think one thing you may be overlooking here is the long-term element, which is there is, I think, a very reliable market of people who will find this extremely collectible and not just be in it for easy money or whatever. They do want to hold these long-term. They like watching the plays and feeling like they own the plays, and that is more or less what I and pretty much everyone else involved at this point are banking on, which is, I think it is, again, not financial advice, but I think it is very possible that digital media, especially in the world of sports collectibles, overtakes the physical sports card world. And I believe it is very close to the case that the NFT world is already doing that, that it like is at least rapidly approaching, already overtaking the physical sports card market. And I think that's totally understandable. Again, there is an enormous headache to be had in trying to find buyers for these mint condition cards and then mail them without them getting damaged and trust them to not screw you over. And you don't have to worry about any of that with the blockchain element. And furthermore, and I think this is pretty overlooked, the people I am banking on eventually getting into this are essentially Gen Z. And it is, well, I'm sure pretty jarring for people our age and older to consider the idea of something purely digital having value. I can't hold this in my hand. I could easily just look at a picture of this on my own for free. The people in Gen Z, not in younger, obviously, we hope this goes for a very long time, barely remember a world before that time. Like, the digital collectibles have been a thing for a long time, and I don't think anyone who is currently like 12 years old or younger is going to have a hard time wrapping their minds around this at all by the time it is relevant for them. And that is, I think, potentially being overlooked by you and potentially by others, is there is, as far as I'm concerned, going to be an enormous number of people, assuming this doesn't zero out anytime soon, who do want to just have their own officially licensed copy of some awesome Steph Curry half-court shot.
So insofar as this is just a collectible and follows the same model that collectibles have followed since the dawn of time, except in a purely digital way this time, that makes sense. And, you know, I feel like I understand that element of it, and I'm sure Gen Z will understand that element of it too. But I think you do quickly get to the point where this is, it is a raw sailor's good. It is a way for people to show that they have money that they can burn on this essentially bizarre concept. And that it is a sailor's good, right? This is a way of flaunting that wealth as a, or, and for people who, you know, for some people, maybe they don't flaunt it, but it's more of a savvy financial investment for them, because they think, sharing your assumption, that it's going to have this audience for a long time. But that's what it is. It is a pure conduit for money, rather than something which, oh, well, I have an attachment to this topic or this thing or this actual history of something, and therefore I want a purchase that reflects that. And, you know, that... if I'm a New England sports fan, right, and I have a lot of money to burn, I buy the jersey that Tom Brady wore when the Patriots won the Super Bowl for the 14th time in a row or whatever. And I can put that in my attic and then eventually show it to my grandkids if I've done a good enough job indoctrinating them into making them, you know, Patriots fans as well. And that item will have a resonance for them and still for me that a officially licensed video clip of Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl could never never possibly could have.
Why, if it's a one out of one mint of Tom Brady making some incredible play, that is essentially the same thing as a game-worn jersey.
Absolutely not the same thing. Not remotely the same thing. Because the thing that has uniqueness in this case is the NFT. It's the token that has a serial number that distinguishes it from the number two moment in which Tom Brady wins the Super Bowl again. That's the thing that has that uniqueness to it versus... this is the one-of-a-kind, literal, physical, one-of-a-kind item that played a part in this moment.
So,
and even though at a glance, I could not tell you that this is Tom Brady's jersey as opposed to some fake that was printed at a T-shirt shop down the road somewhere, firstly, people couldn't authenticate that item in person. You get some expert involved and they can run the numbers, use their machines, whatever. And also... that item has a legacy to it that people value and want to maintain versus, why will my grandkids care that this is the number one Tom Brady moment other than it has a resale price that hopefully will send them to college?
So I would say the NFT version is almost exactly the same thing as far as the authenticity and ownership go, without any concerns whatsoever about forgeries or needing to find experts or needing to find buyers or anything along those lines. And again, I think a lot of people make what I would consider to be a mistake in thinking, I do not find this valuable, and therefore no one else finds this valuable. I am with you that I do not personally care that much about the specific... I do care in some cases about the specific moments that I'm buying and how cool the plays are and whatever, but I don't think it is going to be weird at all for people in the future to view these digital authentic assets as valuable.
But do you think they will see that as a different process than I go onto the online portal that I use for my stockbroker and I see how my stock in generic US megacorp is doing today?
Expand on that. Sorry, I don't know if I fully understand. Like, how is this? Reframe the question for an idiot, please.
Okay. I'll reframe it. So if I want to make an investment of some kind, and I decide to play the stock market. Again, don't do this. Don't take this as any kind of official endorsement. But I go to some financial advisor, and they say, all right, I recommend putting your money here, here, and here. I may not have an investment in, like a personal emotional investment in whichever companies happen to be in my index fund or whatever, right? It's purely a financial investment, and whatever emotional investment I have is purely tied up in the finances and how well that goes or doesn't go. And it seems like categorically NFT should be the same way, or do you think there's something else there?
I do think the collectible element and the coolness element, and this is why it's taking off with like sports memorabilia and art in particular, is a major factor. And I think just like, I don't know if this is entirely related, but if you leave someone a pile of $100 bills, why should they find those valuable? They're valuable because enough people agree that $100 bills are valuable.
Well, sure. But let's take the art case that you mentioned, because you said that the art world is embracing NFTs. And I think that depending on where you look in the art world, the reception is a bit more mixed. So obviously you have some of these high profile success cases who who maybe were making a decent living from normal digital art before, but now they're able to leverage the NFT process to suddenly make a killing, an absolute fortune where they weren't previously. However, you also have the cases that you understandably don't hear about, which is either people who have paid the fee up front to mint an NFT, and that often is a quite sizable fee, because necessarily the blockchain process involves a computational and therefore a financial cost that acts as a barrier to entry by design. Like, that's the way it has to be. And so they pay that upfront cost to mint the NFT, and then find that there's actually no buyers for their NFT art, because there's no guarantee that there should be. And if you follow the raw logic of an NFT, there is no reason to buy it unless you think there is some financial value, unless you think you can resell it yourself, or this is a good way to flaunt that wealth. And this is what I'm getting at, where most collectible markets rely on people not making an explicitly financial decision. They make what may be an emotional decision for them, and it turns out to accidentally reap dividends for them down the line. With this, you know, even if you're a fan of an artist, maybe you think that's a good enough reason to buy an NFT at some mega inflated price and support their work. But if it's just who wants to buy this NFT on the open market, if you can't find a seller for that, well, then you're down money as an artist if no one wants to buy it. So there is a risk doing this. This isn't free money the way that, you know, maybe NBA Top Shot was in its early stages, or some of these other emerging NFT markets are now. You also get into quite thorny issues over actual ownership, because you mentioned ownership of the NFT, which is yours, but as we said, the NFT is kind of a pointer to an object that exists in the world. You don't own the object, you only own the pointer. And and so, you know, you have many instances of artists who find their work being sold in NFT form because someone other than them has minted it and is trying to use that NFT to gain profit for themselves, which I imagine as this becomes a bigger and bigger issue, we will see this litigated in, you know, national courts with regard to copyright law and everything. But so there's that question. And then there's also the fact that many of these NFTs with that kind of thing, you know, I can make an NFT of a piece of digital art, let's say, and you can take that same artwork, you can make an imperceptible change. You flip one pixel somewhere into a very slightly different color, you can make an NFT of that now. And so there's a chance for these NFTs to just completely proliferate. You know, one artwork could represent this massive family of NFTs, and there's no inherent reason why any one of those should have a different value than any of the others either. It is entirely just fool's gold at that point.
So I definitely go ahead. I totally agree with many of the concerns that you were flagging up, and I am, to be clear, I am only at this point interested in NBA Top Shot because I believe in the NBA continuing to be a lasting thing. I think NFTs are, again, like, explicitly gambling at this point, and I'm sure there are a million different concerns, particularly with, like, art forgeries where this isn't actually from the person you think it's from or whatever, that are without a doubt going to come up along the way, and that is a massive concern. And one thing I definitely want to flag up is there are probably hundreds of thousands of different kind of, like, NFT markets already, and a massively overwhelming percentage of those are going to flame out. There's no question in my mind that a huge, huge percentage of people currently shilling whatever NFTs they're trying to shill are not going to work out for either the buyer, or, as you also flagged up, like, people may mint their own NFTs, not get buyers, and they're down money. That is absolutely a very real thing that I do not mean to diminish in any way. I am, when I talk about being confident in NFTs, I think what I'm saying is, I don't want to say this with, like, 100% certainty, but for me, conceptually, this is such a good idea that some, I don't know which ones necessarily, but some NFTs are almost surely going to stick around. The question right now in March 2021 is which ones, and I just personally feel by far the best about Top Shot. But to go back to a name that came up very early on into the podcast, probably confused a bunch of people because it sounds kind of weird, but this is a good illustration, art pun, of had success stories in the early days. This guy who goes by the name Beeple spent the last 13 years making a different piece of digital art just by himself every single day, and recently made headlines when his first 5,000 pieces were combined together into this dailies collection and sold for $69 million, which now, as things currently stand, makes him the third most valuable artist alive, which is wild. And it would not have gone for anything close to that if the buyers were not absolutely certain that they were buying from the real Beeple himself. And that is absolutely, I'm positive, going to be an issue for many people, is they buy something they don't know is not from the right source, or they, again, try to mint their own NFTs that don't actually have a market. There is zero question that tons of people, in the ensuing years are definitely going to take a bath on some NFTs. Absolutely no doubt whatsoever. But as far as I'm concerned, NFTs, the concept, are almost certainly, not 100%, but as far as I would be concerned, very, very likely to stick around. And it is merely a question of which one. And I just personally feel by far the best about Top Shot right now, because I can't really afford a Beeple.
It's worth noting, the guy who ponied up $69 million for the Beeple art is a crypto investor, like a known hideously rich crypto investor, who I believe is a business partner of Beeple at one point, but don't quote me on that. But so I don't know if this was someone who, you know, was reluctant to invest their hard-won money, but they decided, now that we have this certificate of authenticity, I'm going to take the plunge and throw $69 million at this digital art, which, again, to whatever extent you want to use the phrase real value here, if the real value was anywhere within an order of magnitude of that ballpark, you'd have expected Beeple himself to be a much bigger deal a much longer time ago, right? It's not like this is some rags-to-riches story enabled by the brilliant magic of NFTs for the first time.
I mean, I think in March 2021, it's not that crazy to me that this could come from a source that wasn't already a household name. I don't think it requires like Banksy being the one seller. Probably not the best illustrated. I could have probably picked a more famous artist than Banksy. It doesn't have to be a series of Jackson Pollocks that are selling for some crazy amount of money. I think what the investor was investing in is being the first one to make absolutely unfathomable sized purchase in this field, essentially banking on this continuing to be a popular concept. And I think that's what all of us who are currently investing in NFTs are banking on, is this NFT platform, medium, whatever you want to call it, continuing to be a lasting thing, and hoping that we are in on the right ones.
So the way you're framing that, it makes it sound like, again, this is a placing your bet. You know, you're putting your money here and hoping you get more money out here on the other side. And the people who are best placed to capitalize on this are either people who already have a lot of money and are hoping to run up the score. It's grifters who are hoping to, you know, create new NFTs out of nothing and then pass those on and just hoping to make a quick buck on the turnaround. Or, you know, a small group of artists who, seemingly at random, there's no kind of, doesn't seem to be any kind of meritocratic element to who wins out from this and who doesn't. Just a random group of people who are in the right place at the right time will somehow make a fortune from this, and you will only hear about those cases and not the people who lost out on this through other ways.
So I definitely think we are going to hear plenty about people who lost a bunch on NFTs, and without getting into the details or whatever, I can personally assure you that the barrier to entry is not some situation where it's just rich people running up the score. It is, I would say, a huge opportunity for people without a ton going for them to be not in the right place at the right time, the way it sounds like you were framing it. I don't think it's going to be random artists or random buyers ending up making a killing here, but it's like any other kind of market over the course of like human history, quality will win out. And the people who are just like grifters are very quickly going to be exposed.
I would postulate that there are many, many markets where grifters are making an absolute killing and perhaps are the primary beneficiaries of such markets. But
that's definitely fair. That's totally fair. But I think NFTs are a very, certainly not a true like meritocracy or whatever, but they offer opportunities as far as I'm concerned to people who would not otherwise have them. So already running much longer. Well, sorry.
There are opportunities, and those can be good or bad, right? Like, there are, you know, any investment opportunity is an opportunity that I wouldn't have had otherwise. But
it is without a doubt going to end very badly for many people. At no point have I been trying to frame it any other way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, what do you see as possible use cases for NFTs other than shuffling money around people who may or may not deserve to have it redistributed to or away from them?
People like collecting things. It's the two things that I'm very much sold on conceptually are the authenticity element and the ownership element. And I don't at all, frankly, believe that this is going to just be a space where people are just trying to get the bag and then pass it off on someone else constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So remains to be seen, obviously. Like, there is a very real chance. I feel like every 15 minutes it is worth flagging up. This could quite conceivably just be Beanie Babies. This could Beeple Babies. This could be a total bubble here.
I was going to say, it reminds me of when you're a kid and your parent says, oh, they're going to get you a pet, and then they let you sponsor a donkey or something. And you don't actually own the donkey. You don't even have a share in the donkey. The donkey just exists as an abstract concept somewhere, and you get to console yourself that you're helping to, you know, help it live or whatever.
So I would say, in this case, you don't get to go hang out with and pet the donkey. I don't get to become friends with LeBron James or whatever, but you do literally own the authentic version, in my case, of that play. Like, there is a real ownership element.
But the authentic version is a company realizing that they can make a lot of money, even more money than they already have, from monetizing that and doing it. It's not that there's, you know, why is that version more authentic outside of its resale value than the version you can find on YouTube?
What definition of authentic are you using here?
I'm saying a company realizing that this is a perfect way to milk money from people is, I mean, I guess it's authentic to what a corporation is, but it seems like the least organic, way of enjoying that cultural sporting moment that you could possibly imagine.
So I think we are, again, still in the very, very early days, and there are going to be massive kind of utility implementations, which is, I think, kind of what you're getting at, where it is very possible to me that people, even like this time next year, who go to an NBA game are going to be able to unlock some sort of special moment that you could only get by being at that arena at that time. Or you can use the players that you have in your collection to play fantasy with or whatever. There, I think, are enormous utility opportunities, particularly in the Top Shot world, that don't even exist yet. And I think it is entirely realistic that we are barely scratching the surface on what NFTs can do and can become and how they can be implemented in a ton of different fields. But I don't at all think that this is just one giant Ponzi scheme.
Okay, so I guess I will answer my own
question.
Sorry,
let me also add, because I've been meaning to say this for a while. If the NBA just wants to take their 5% and they view this as a money grab opportunity, aren't they massively incentivized to keep this going and open the door for as many people who are genuine like collectors as they can?
Yes, I suppose. I mean,
I'm counting on the NBA and particularly Dapper Labs, who does Top Shot, continuing to act in their own best interest. That's a vital piece for me, is them recognizing how much incentive there is for them to continue making this an authentic and legitimate product that people see value in.
Yes, I guess I would just say be very vigilant of when their interests become decoupled from the interest of the people who end up buying the NFTs, is, you know, because I don't think those two are quite in lockstep automatically, you know, for the rest of time. But to answer the question that I posed to you, it seems like one actual plausible use case here is things like ticket sales, right? Where this is, in theory, a way to add a certain degree of certainty to who owns a particular right to something in that sense. Although even there, you run into certain logistical questions at the edges, I think.
I think there are, again, borderline infinite directions that this could end up going as far as utility is concerned. And the fact that it is not immediately apparent is not a concern for me. I like that this is so early into the process that it still has that many different timelines.
I'm saying if there are borderline infinite, then one example should be able to be, you know, come up with.
I did. Again, I'm only focused on the basketball element of this, but I listed off like four examples of ways that utility could be implemented with that.
But all of those are essentially creating ways to make collectibles out of nothing in order that, you know, someone else somewhere can make some money from them. Like, it's not like, so with other blockchain-based activities, I suppose, you at least hear about these theoretical use cases for, you know, what they could do in a general space, whether it's, you know, for people who need to process payments in countries where the usual banking system is corrupt or unreliable or something, or, you know, however much you might quibble with any one of the examples, people at least try to offer a case for why this is, the existence of this is an ethical good beyond the fact that it's making me more money or whatever.
So I would say these are concerns that I would find much more relevant in like the cryptocurrency world, where like I'm lightly involved in Bitcoin. And when I buy Bitcoin, it is because I am purely banking on people in the future finding Bitcoin valuable, despite it offering absolutely no real utility beyond being viewed as valuable. Whereas I feel like NFTs do add that actually, you can't physically hold this digital code in your hand. I will definitely grant that, but I don't think that's going to be a big deal for people in the future. I think a lot of people are very hung up on the, yeah, well, I don't physically have anything element of this, and that is not a concern for me as far as Gen Z and beyond goes.
I mean, I think other trading card or collectible card games or enterprises do offer a useful comparison point there, but like there is a sentimental attachment that comes with like physical cards that you can hold in your hand and that you can show other people, and that you can, you know, you have them in a box, and maybe you're not even involved or engaged with it anymore, but from time to time it's kind of nice to open up the box and just rifle through them and, you know, relive the memories of, oh, I remember when I was this many years old and I obtained this or whatever. Whereas
in this case, you're just scrolling through it on your phone.
I'm saying that doesn't trigger the same brain chemicals in the vast majority of people.
Dom, I you got a pack today, right? I can't wait for you to open it.
No, absolutely not. And maybe okay. This is all bitterness that I'm projecting. And if I actually had moved up the queue, I'd be singing a different tune.
See, you somehow managed to brick a pack on the first pack drop ever, where everyone is guaranteed a pack. The good news for you is you have two more days.
No, I was 200,000th or something in the queue, and only 10,000 people ahead of me now. Great. You know, if I'm still awake in God knows how many hours, maybe 10,000. I can capitalize on that.
I mean, you're gonna be up by the time this podcast is over. When you get that pack and potentially open that pack, like, there is a huge amount of enjoyment that comes with opening packs and looking through your collections, even if they're purely digital. I guarantee you, my friends love ripping packs on NBA Top Shot.
Does it matter if I know nothing about the people involved or the moments, and the only thing that matters to me is, you know, what hypothetical profit I could gain by selling off these moments to the first available buyer?
So this is, I will spare you the rant along these lines, but yeah, you're going to obviously have a less enjoyable time if you've never heard of any of the people whose names you're seeing and you don't care about basketball. And that is, frankly, a big percentage of the people who are currently buying up a lot of the packs is they've just heard about these packs being free money and they show up to all of the pack lotteries. If they get a good number, they buy the pack. They don't even really care what's in it. They're just hoping to get something that they can immediately resell. Like, that is absolutely a real thing that is going on right now. And for my money, I think, and I hope, and have reason, I think, at this point to believe that Dapper being the company that runs NBA Top Shot, recognizes that the current pack situation, the demand is so, so high that doing that practice of what I've essentially come to call like loot boxing, the NBA Top Shot world, where all you're interested in doing is getting a pack and snap reselling it, is a big kind of issue at this point, and they are desperately trying to make packs actually closer to value in like the amount that people pay, so it's not like a reliable thing where as long as you can get a pack, you're guaranteed profit, and the clear move is sign up every family member you know to maximize your chances at getting a pack. I think those days are very soon going to be over there. But yeah, that is, at this point, something that is like being pretty heavily incentivized, frankly. And if you end up wanting to go that route, that is totally within your rights.
Yeah. And hey, if the market stabilizes to a point where there's not really any actual money to be gained, and it's just a question of genuine NBA enthusiasts who do like this finding an activity they enjoy, great. Let people enjoy things. That's always been my motto, as you know. But you know, it feels like if the end result of this is mostly just creating a new style of collectibles, that seems like a lot less ambitious of a goal than there are borderline infinite use cases of this. That sounds like exactly one use case.
No, I think it's somewhere. I mean, you're pretty much laying out the two most extreme ends of the spectrum there. I think there are always going to be people who are in it for the money. But what I am counting on, and I think this is a fair thought, is there are also going to be plenty of people who do want these digital assets, whether it's NBA Top Shot or anything else, because they genuinely find them cool and want to have a collection of their own. And as long as the balance is not completely out of whack there, the way it kind of currently is with the supply and demand of NBA Top Shot packs, because it literally 100x'd its user base in like 2 months and became the literal fastest growing marketplace in human history. Once that has a chance to kind of balance itself out, I think we're going to be looking at a completely, or at least a marginally, if not substantially different kind of dynamic there. And I, as far as I am concerned, that is merely a matter of time. Like, I could be dead wrong about this, but I think the appeal is going to be kids and, or adults, but people who want to go buy a Steph Curry moment because he's their favorite player and they can get an authentic Steph Curry play that they can watch on their iPad anytime they want and know that they actually own that play.
But they don't own the play. They own...
In the context of NFTs, they absolutely do.
Okay, they own a serial number. Like, I could make an NFT of this podcast episode, and...
You think I haven't thought about that?
Look, all I'm saying is, Rob makes enough money already, but if you wanted to make more, there are people out there who I'm sure would buy, you know. But, like... Let's say Rob actually pulled the trigger and did that. Let's indulge our hypothetical.
Better hypothetical, I would say, because I've certainly thought about this. Let's say CBS pulls the trigger and says, we're going to make NFTs out of iconic Survivor moments.
Okay, so in that case, if I bought one of those, I would own a serial number for an NFT that, in theory, represents a Survivor moment. But that is completely unmoored from the actual Survivor moment itself. Like, I don't own, God knows what, Eric giving immunity to Natalie, right? I would love to. God knows I would love to, but I don't, and there's no way I can.
But you would. You would explicitly own that NFT version of it, and other people would want that.
Okay, but why is that better than me, like, me linking someone to the, you know, funny 115 entry on it, or going on YouTube and watching it again. Like, there's no, I don't own a tangible thing. I own an abstract concept which has actual no mooring in the real world whatsoever.
Okay, so based on the way this conversation has gone, one of the two of us is going to be ultimately proven to be wildly off base here, because I to be blunt about it.
No. To clarify, I'm not denying that there will be a market for that, and that there will be a market for other NFTs, and that many of them may be wildly lucrative and successful. All I'm saying is, let's not dress this up as something that that it's not. I'm not, like...
I think you are hung up on not having anything physical, that you don't have anything you can physically keep, for all you have is some code.
It doesn't need to be physical. It just needs to actually bear a relation to something.
This is from CBS. They're saying these are the Survivor NFTs. We have Rob's voting confessional for Roger, where he does the na-na-na-na, hey-hey, goodbye. There are dozens of wand-off people who would be extremely jealous and want to pay money for whoever has the authentic version of that.
Do you think there is a difference between, let's say, me buying the actual buff that someone wore on Survivor, you know, on eBay or something, versus buying that tribe's buff in the CBS store, versus like buying a replica of that buff that someone just made with their 3D printer at home?
So, I mean, I would say buying a game worn buff, or like a buff that has been autographed by all the people on the tribe or whatever, is essentially the authentic version, and buying the replica buff from Buff USA or whatever the company is called is the printing it out and having your own inauthentic copy of it. There's no extra value in having just a generic Villains Tribe buff, but there is a huge amount of extra value in having the Villains Tribe buff that Boston Rob actually wore while they were out there. And I would say the officially licensed, authenticated by CBS NFT version of Rob Cesternino's voting confessional would be massively more valuable than someone linking you to it on YouTube.
So to use the Beanie Babies comparison that you mentioned as a hypothetical a while back, looking back on that whole craze, do you think that craze added anything to the world, or like contributed anything, or was it just, you know, for a short period of time? And again, don't focus on the time horizon there, but people were willing to pay a lot of money for things which, in retrospect, you know, turned out to not sustain that value.
So I think Beanie Babies are essentially like a physical representation of physical NFTs has been like a running meme on the thing. Like, trading cards have jokingly been called physical NFTs now. Beanie Babies are essentially like one of the NFTs that didn't pan out, and sports cards are the NFTs that did pan out, except they're physical.
Right, and you know, there might be a comparison where, like, if I buy NBA merch from the official NBA store, then, okay, there's... that carries the imprimatur of the NBA, and that means something to most buyers, whereas, you know, someone making fan-made replica jerseys of... Yeah, for the NBA, that doesn't have the same quality to it. I get the distinction there for the people that matters to. All I'm saying is, when you can literally make an NBA, an NFT out of anything, including things that you yourself don't own and have no personal stake in, and things which themselves could just vanish from existence, like the NFT that Jack Dorsey sold of his first tweet, for example, for, you know, $2 million. If a Twitter servers go down, the tweet isn't there, right? If Twitter gets deleted, or if, already that is something that is very ephemeral, and the NFT for that thing is even more ephemeral still, like on another level by itself. And, you know,
I'm not going to pretend to know what that word means.
Well, just ghostly. Like, it's just, it's not, it's ethereal. It's just there.
Okay. So I totally... I think I understand what you're saying, which is, this is a high risk kind of situation. This is all potentially much more liable to blow up overnight if there's some sort of like data corruption or whatever. And that is a valid concern, the same way that buying some sort of NFT art that is not from the actual artist or is in some way inauthentic is an extremely valid concern. And that is, again, why I am not straying anywhere beyond Top Shot at this point.
Okay. And
it is all of this is taking a big gamble. And I think I may have mentioned that once or twice, but again, this is not financial advice in any way. I just think I personally, and I'm not endorsing any sort of actions that listeners take, but I personally have a frankly difficult time seeing the concept of NFTs going away at this point. It is merely a matter, as far as I'm concerned, of which ones end up working out in the long run.
But I think that doesn't point to their fundamental utility, but rather to, again, how completely open-ended the concept is, where if literally anything can be made into an NFT, then of course NFTs will never go away, because there literally is no limit to what can be embodied in them.
They'll go away if people don't see any value in them.
Well, sure, but that's the same with, you know, literally any consumer good, right?
Well, I feel like a lot of the things that you've been saying are like concerns that would have been concerns in the early days of many, many other things that we just totally take for granted now. Fiat currency, to go back to that example, like the first person to say, hey, this $1 bill is really worth a dollar. Trust me, I promise. It's minted by the U.S. government or whatever. Whoever is doing the minting, wherever you're getting your currency, like, I suspect that took a little while to catch on.
Okay, not to incur the wrath of all of the hardcore Bitcoin stans who may or may not still be listening, but fiat currency has an objective use in the world where, because we all agree to let these things represent a common denominator of value,
we all eventually agreed.
Well, yeah, but there was a vital purpose for that, which is it made all of human trade and commerce that much more easy.
But we already had trade and commerce before fiat currency.
Yeah, we did, and it was much more difficult. And
physical cards are much more difficult than NFTs.
Okay, I'm saying previously, my attempt to barter, you know, three goats and a sheep for your wooden raft or something was a lot more complicated versus saying, well, my goats are worth $10 each and your ship is worth $30, so let's see what we can do.
Whole point of what non-fungible means is there is no direct correlation. That is part of the appeal here, is that they are all distinct and there are not interchangeable NFTs.
But they're distinct because we agree this one has a serial number one, this one has a serial number two. It's not because they have some representational content that is actually different from each other in any way.
I feel like we've gone back and forth on this particular topic enough. There are definitely very valid concerns to be had about what the utility will end up being in many cases, and there are, beyond that, just countless concerns about an enormous percentage of NFTs in general. I am by no means telling anyone to go put one dime into any NFT that they personally do not believe in. I think a very foolish move would be going and just trying to get in on what you think will be a craze that doesn't actually have any utility. And Dom, if you want to just buy whatever packs you can and sell them to us fools who see long-term value in NBA Top Shot, again, that is completely within your rights there. And I'm sure you will be laughing all the way to the bank in these scenarios where this does not work out. But these are concerns that pretty much everyone has grappled with themselves and seems to feel okay about. At least a very meaningful number of people seem to feel okay about them. And I am one such person. I feel like, again, NFTs are not 100%, but more or less an inevitability to me. It is merely a matter of which ones enough people ultimately find utility in and see that sort of value in. But the other thing that I definitely did not want to get out of here without addressing, and this is another very common criticism, counterpoint, whatever you want to call it, about NFTs, and has certainly existed with crypto in the past and all sorts of digital assets and etc., is the environmental concerns, which are absolutely a real problem. I don't know that NFTs specifically are the straw that are breaking the camel's back here. The mining is going on, whether people are buying NFTs or not. And more to the point here, the founder, CEO of Dapper Labs that I have referenced a couple times, they're the people behind the scenes on NBA Top Shot, making all of this go as smoothly as it has, the founder is a literal former biologist himself who has repeatedly voiced massive concerns about the environmental impact of just this whole kind of digital revolution, if that's not too strong of a word, that it is, at least if you want to take him at his word, a huge priority for him. And something that I personally feel like is in good hands as far as Dapper goes. And it is entirely possible, again, that I'm just being completely swindled here, but I don't have like firsthand insight into the exact kind of like environmental damage being done, although there are definitely countless people on Twitter who will tell you all about it while non-ironically and seemingly without even realizing it, tweeting from their sixth iPhone in 10 years with absolutely no problem about that. But there is for sure an environmental toll being taken. I just feel good that the people in this space share those same concerns and are very well suited to and very interested in doing everything they can to amend that and make that, you know, streamline, make that more efficient as quickly as possible, because this is certainly not something that is without that sort of cost. And I absolutely wanted to acknowledge that on the airwaves as well, although again, while it is definitely a short-term concern for me, and we will see how it plays out in the long run, I do think it is a concern for the people that are at the top of that kind of food chain as well, and a big priority for them to make that a better situation as quickly as possible. And we'll finally state, like, I don't think NFTs are even making a dent in the grand scheme of things there, and people freaking out about the environmental concerns about NFTs, as far as I have been able to tell, are maybe I'm just seeing what I want to see here, but I think, as with any kind of new technology, scary may be the wrong word, but it's difficult to immediately embrace this sort of thing. And I frankly feel like the people screaming from the mountaintops about the environmental concerns about NFTs are at least a meaningful number of them just kind of wanting to both reject this concept that they don't really understand while taking the moral high ground. What a win-win that is for a lot of people on Twitter, it seems. So we will see certainly what becomes of that. And it may be the case that this is a massive issue for a long time, and that would deeply, deeply bother me. But as things stand right now, I feel like a lot of what is being made out of that is at least in part, if not in large part, kind of cover for just wanting to reject the ideas of NFTs in the first place. And if they were actually that concerned about the environment, they would be for sure directing their attention elsewhere there, Dom. But one just kind of like,
so, well, taking all of that from the top then, even if this one person, the founder and CEO of Dapper, does have that firm conviction and sticks by it, you know, despite whatever short-term easy profits may be on offer, or you know, if he's actually able to have that stance reflected in the actions of his company, which, you know, I don't know what the corporate structure of Dapper is like, but, you know, making all those assumptions, he is still only one player in that space, and that may be a reason to stick to NBA Top Shot or to other platforms who you feel comfortable with on those ethical grounds. But as you say, NFTs are such a broad concept that there will be so many actors in the space who don't have those same rigorous moral views, and they're just out to make a quick dime. And for those people, you know, the environmental concern, however stark it may be, will be so far down the list in terms of what they care about. And you know, so even if you have one shiny example who is operating there, I don't know how representative he is going to be. And then I do agree that the environmental concerns are kind of a distraction from the larger point. I don't think the iPhone thing, I mean, there is a discussion to be had about the certainly the labor standards and the environmental impact of consumer technology and so on and so forth. But this is coming back to me being hung up on having a physical thing. Like, to make an iPhone, it requires parts and assembly and physical labor and so on. And there is a level of environmental impact baked into that. And that is a trade-off that you have to confront if you want that technology to exist. Whereas with stuff like this, it feels like one reason this hits home for so many people, especially where cryptocurrency is concerned and basically any blockchain system that relies on proof of work over other proofs, each of which have their own flaws and questions around them. But it's the fact that it is so both inherently and unnecessarily wasteful. Like, if there was some compelling use case where your human civilization at the whole was benefiting from having Bitcoin in existence, for example, then the fact that, you know, Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever is rivaling the environmental pollution of Argentina or whatever that commonly quoted stat is, and it doesn't need to be that, whatever the actual impact is, it's the fact that there's no reason for this to exist seemingly other than to make some people more money. And so yeah, you can be as critical of it on those grounds as you would be of, you know, random generic villainous megacorp raising a middle finger to the environment just to increase their short-term profits. That's what rankles many people there, I think.
I definitely see that point of these are not necessary to be creating here. It's not like we are adding value to like the human existence by necessarily creating these NFTs or whatever, but I do feel like it is rather difficult to find areas where that is not a similar concern. Not only the trade-off between environmental impact and what we are actually creating, but areas where virtually anyone near the top of the game is not extremely willing to sacrifice both the environment, human life, whatever it takes to increase profit margins. And I don't think NFTs are by any stretch something that stands out in that way. I mean, look at what's going on with Amazon right now. It's completely ridiculous the extent to which that sort of greed bleeds into literally any situation where large amounts of money are to be made.
And I don't think that NFT skeptics or cryptocurrency skeptics, you know, they're not Luddites, most of them. They don't, you know, reject technology as a whole or the desire for technological progress. It's just a question about this form of technological progress and the fact that it doesn't really seem to be progress of any meaningful sort at all.
I agree that digital assets are not doing for the land what creating other things or doing for the land or doing for humanity, like giving back to mankind or the planet in the way that certain things do. But I also think this is just an extraordinarily common gripe across the board that extends so far beyond NFTs and crypto, etc. We didn't need Amazon. We got Amazon and it ended up streamlining a lot of things. But I think very real cases can be made, certainly based on what we're seeing these days, that we would have been better off without having Amazon in the first place. But someone was eventually going to be the Amazon. And I am not disputing that the creation of these digital assets is adding intrinsic value to like the human experience in a way that many other things do, again, but I also, at this point, do not believe that it is anything worthy of the degree of skepticism is the wrong word. I feel already like I'm diminishing the environmental concerns, which I am not at all attempting to do, but I think essentially that this sort of thing is inevitable along the way, and NFTs are not going to be the first and certainly not going to be the last to fall into this category. But
I will say, I do think there are a sizable chunk of people whose environmental concerns here are motivated by the fact that they want a new graphics card for their new rig or whatever, and it's costing them more than they think it should because of, you know, all of them have been earmarked for Bitcoin mining. But leaving those people aside, I think it might just be the fact that a lot of the online discourse about, certainly cryptocurrency and maybe NFTs now too, has this kind of very cultish quality to it almost.
Yes.
Where you see people just go down this rabbit hole, and now all they tweet about is crypto and NFTs, and they do their best to evangelize and convert other people. And, you know, if you're not buying in, well, you're just one more rube who's letting history pass them by. And it's, you know, maybe those people are being bad ambassadors for the wider topic there.
I will go so far as to say the following. This is the one piece of legitimate financial advice I will offer on this podcast to make it clear that I am not some person out here just trying to shill for Top Shot. Without getting into the details, at the time of this recording, I actually think that the next week or two could be a particularly bad time to be buying into Top Shot with the...
Oh, great, thanks.
No.
I say having just placed my $9 order for my pack. Which,
No. It is precisely because of the people like Dom that are making this a bad time. The pack drop today was the first time in Top Shot history that everyone who wants one can get a pack, and these packs are going to arrive in a couple of weeks, and when they do, the Doms of the world are going to be tanking the market by just saying, okay, I just want a quick sale, I'm going to undercut whatever the current low ask is. I would say if you are somehow interested in Top Shot after all of this, I would personally be waiting a bit on buying into it. So in case there is any sort of sense of like me just trying to pump my own bags here on other people, I deeply hope that that is not interpreted to be the case, because it is absolutely not. I merely intend only to talk about NFTs in general, and will reiterate a final time, none of this is even slightly investment advice, financial advice, anything of the sort. This is just something that Dom has been asking me about, and other people have been asking me about, and I was finally willing to go on the record and discuss, and I'm already, frankly, terrified about how inarticulate I was on a lot of things along the way here, and feel not quite humiliated or whatever, but I feel like I've done a disservice just based on the much better answers that someone far more informed along these lines could have given. And that is a concern for me as we begin to kind of wrap up this podcast. Is I'm positive I'm going to hang this up and think of other things I should have brought up, or I'm going to be editing this and think of, oh, why didn't I think of saying that to Dom, which is often the case, but particularly here, just given the stakes of discussing NFTs compared to the stakes of discussing any random episode of Survivor, I am a lot more self-conscious about things I may have misspoken on, or counterpoints I didn't make, or things along the way that hopefully people who have whatever interest they end up having in this are able to find answers from much smarter people than me on before putting any kind of actual real money that they care about into this. I would definitely say, before spending a dollar, do a lot more research beyond just listening to this one podcast.
No, I think you're good. Go out and go out and be merry.
Okay. Yeah, Dom's here trying to pump his $9 pack onto everyone. But
hey, it's not going to be a $9 pack for long, believe me.
Yeah. Dom, I'm positive as soon as we hang this up, I'm going to be mad at myself for all the things I forgot to bring up along the way. But we have certainly exhausted a ton of time here that I am now looking at the clock and seeing ran quite a bit longer than I was anticipating. But do you have any other burning questions at this hour?
Yeah, if anyone out there wants to buy a bridge, just hit me up. Got some great ones. Like, what?
I
Poking my wares while I'm here and have my platform.
I am very open to the possibility that I am the one who ends up hilariously wrong, as history ends up looking back on this discussion. I just can't shake the feeling that it's almost definitely going to be one of us who, years from now, ends up being deeply humiliated by the way all of this has played out. But at the very, you know what? You may finally be off the hook for those Brexit podcasts, man.
Oh, we're going to do one of those again soon. Don't you worry.
Do you really want to keep podcasting about Brexit?
No, we Brexit has happened now. We got to wrap this up.
It sounds like it's going smoothly.
Well, we'll talk about that.
All right, anyone who's mad at me right now, just go back and listen to our old Brexit podcast and be mad at Dom instead.
Very informative.
Yes. All right, well, he is on Twitter, of course, at DomHRV. I am on Twitter at Colin Stone. Thank you to anyone who has made it this far without unsubscribing to this podcast. And if you would like to listen to future episodes that are not about NFTs, but you are someone who found us through somehow being an NFT fan and made it this far, who also likes reality TV, we do episodes on this feed every Wednesday talking generally about reality TV, and bonus episodes over on the Patreon feed, $5 a month, patreon.com/DomandColin every Saturday. So until next time, thank you guys for bearing with us. Again, deeply concerned about all the things I wish I had said or not said over the course of this podcast, and already very fearful in advance about how this episode is going to age. But I believe that is going to finally do it for us here today. We will talk to you guys soon. Take care, everybody.